I don't know what I want to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about the parasha. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world, and I want to share. I want to dedicate the sicha tonight to Eli Ukrainchik Shlita. Eli is a big inspiration to me as I watch him steiging every day. It's a real inspiration. He's always growing. He's always he's big, and he sent me a he sent my Dafyomi group a message today, which I thought was really amazing. So I'm going to start with that. It's a message that I think he got from Harav Yaakov Klein Shlita, but it's built on a Gemara in yesterday's Daf Yomi, a really beautiful Gemara, a very important Gemara, and a good Musar Shmuz, and right away a fantastic Musar Shmuz. And the Gemara is a piece of Agadata on Daf Pei Tes, and the Gemara identifies a pasuk, and the pasuk identifies that when it comes to the avos, the language of the pasuk seems to indicate like the older one of the avos, we shouldn't rely on him. The youngest of the avos, we shouldn't rely on him, and rather the middle of the avos, he's the one that we should count on, we should bank on. And that's Yaakov, that's Yitzchak. The Gemara describes that basically, Yitzchak, when Hashem wanted to punish the Jewish people, Yitzchak stood up for us. And he stood up for us in a very, very dramatic way. And the Gemara has a Shach Levataria where I wish I'm just going to look for it quickly. I'd like to read it to you specifically. The Gemara has a Shach Levataria that Yitzchak Avinu, oh, here it is, that Yitzchak Avinu tells Hashem, like, you want to punish them? Why do you want to punish them? So Hashem says they sinned. They sinned. Amar lo Yitzchak, banecha chatuli. Hashem says to Yitzchak, your sons sinned to me. Amar lefanav. Yitzchak answers back, Ribono shel olam, banai, they're my sons, velo banecha, they're not your sons, they're also your sons. After all, you refer to the Jewish people when they said Naaseh v'Nishma, they accepted the Torah, you refer to the Jewish people as Kara Lahem Bini Bechori. You called us Bini Bechori, so Hashem, Yitzchak says to Hashem, they're your sons. Ve'od, kama chatu, how much do they actually sin? Yeah, they made an egel azav, but how much do they actually sin? After all, a person's average lifetime is 70 years. Kama shnosav shel adam, shivim shana. So dal esrim delo anasht alayu. The first 20 years of a person's life, he's not chayv in onshin, so subtract that right away. And that leaves us with only 50 years of potential sin. But pashaluhu, that leaves 50. Dal esim v'chamesh delelusa. Take away 25 years of half the time is nighttime, where you're basically sleeping. So cut away those years. That's 25 years out of 50. Half, cut that out where we're sleeping. You're left with 25. Dal tarte srei upalga. Take away 12 and a half of those years, half of those years. Ditzaluye, where we're davening. Umecha, where we're eating. Udebeisakise, where we're taking care of our personal hygiene needs. We spend a lot of time doing those things as well. So what are you left with? You're left with 12 and a half years. 12 and a half years. And Hashem, Yitzchak says, okay, now we've got 12 and a half years of sinning out of 70. Not so terrible. Vim ata sovales kula, mutav. If you're willing to bear that, Hashem, good. Vim lav, palga alai, palgi alecha. You want to go 50-50 with me, Hashem? I'm okay with that. Ve'im timsalomar. And if Hashem, you want to go ahead and make me take all of those 12 and a half years of that sin on me, I got it. I'll take those things. After all, I think because I was taken on the Akedah and I was bound on the Akedah, hakrivas nafshi kamach. That gives me the zchuyos to go ahead and bear their sins, so let them be. And essentially, Hashem accepts Yitzchak's tefillah, he accepts this tshuva, and that is how the Gemara concludes. So the Gemara is saying something very, very important. It's saying something important about Yitzchak fighting for Klal Yisrael, saying something very important about the Akedah and its impact. But what is saying even more important is an idea that when you think about life and you think about how long we are on this earth, we're on this earth, Shivim Shana, in Bigvuros, if we're strong, if we're mighty, Shmonim Shana, 80 years. I'm telling you, I've been quite impacted. This week, we heard about the Ptira, unfortunately, of Rabbi Norman Lamb. Now, I'm not sure how many of you really understand who Rabbi Norman Lamb was as a person, but he was the president, the third president of Yeshiva University. When I was in Yeshiva University, he was the president. He took over the presidency in 1976, and Yeshiva University was on the verge of bankruptcy. And he did an incredible job of building the university and taking it out of that financial problem, etc. But much more important than that was he a giant in drush, in learning, in all different facets, a phenomenal speaker, a real giant in a lot of different ways, and someone who I saw as, like, you know, I looked up to as a person who could speak and who could, as a thinker and a writer, very, very eloquent person, and passed away 92 years. And that's a long life. When I see people that I look up to and you know, people that I admire and I respect, and they pass on, as is the Darko Shel Olam, we realize that we're not here forever. And we have to make our moments count. We have to make our days count. And in light of this Gemara, I don't know if Rav Yaakov Klein was the author of this or he got it from somewhere, but Eli shared with me a tremendous insight, which I think is, again, Dvarim Pshutim, but when you really apply it, pretty significant. And he did the following research. The Gemara discusses how our lives are divided amongst all of these activities. And in America, these are the average amount of time, based on modern statistics, that comes out. We spend of our lives, again, if we live an average life of 75, 80 years, whatever it might be, we spend 33 years of our lives in bed. I'll say that again. 33 years of our lives in bed, 26 years sleeping, and 7 years trying to fall asleep. Okay, or like, you know, getting into that pre-sleep or post-sleep mode. 33 years of your life in bed. 13 years of your life, this seems small to me actually, but 13 years of your life at work, I would have thought much more than that, but okay. 11 years on screens, of your lives will be on screens. Wow. 4 years of your life, you'll spend eating. 3 years of your life, you'll spend on vacation. 1.5 years of your life, you'll spend exercising. 1 year of your life, I don't know what this means exactly, on romance. 1 year of your life on socializing. So how many years do you have left to live? After you did all those things, you're left with, that leaves the average American with 8 years worth of time to live, to pursue dreams, to spend time with the kids, to engage with religious activities, etc. That's in the secular world. Perhaps in the religious world, it's a little bit different. And that's what we're talking about. So then he makes the following point. In this list of statistics of the lives of the general population, many of these areas negate the other. So, for example, you can't be both at work and also on vacation. You can't be exercising and also eating. You can't be socializing and also watching TV. And you certainly can't be engaged in religious service while doing any of these things. That's in the general secular world. However, the unique thing about Avodas Hashem is that even after the pie chart of the years of our lives are all sliced up into different categories to equal 110 years, we can, at the very same time, have spent 120 years of our lives serving the master of the world. Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. And it all depends on our kavana. So when you go to sleep tonight, as you're about to put your head on the pillow, after you turn off your screen, spend 15 seconds saying Hareini Muchan Mezuman Lakaye Mitzvos Aseh Shel Torah, to sharpen the saw, to make my body more stronger and healthier and better to do Avodas Hashem tomorrow. And that's why I'm getting the rest that I need to get right now. And now you sleep for 7 hours, 8 hours, whatever it might be, and all of a sudden that 7, 8 hours becomes endowed with mitzvah. When you go to your job this summer, or after you graduate college, whenever, and you say that those 13 years that I'm in the office, that I'm working to go ahead and support my kids and support my wife and give tzedakah and all of that, that 13 years becomes Avodas Hashem. And when you're playing sports or exercising, you could do so with an attitude of like, I wanna look good. It's cool. I want to be cool. I want to look cool. Or you could do so with a vision of Hashem gave me a goof and I want to preserve it so that I can service Him better. And all of a sudden, that year and a half of exercise becomes Avodas Hashem. I don't know how you turn screen time into Avodas Hashem unless you're hearing Zoom Shiurim all day long and the like. But if you have a little leisure time in your day and you need a little bit of whatever, Nintendo, whatever, your half hour, and it's what gives you your chiyus, your energy to do the other mitzvahs, your vacation time is going to give you the energy to be better with your children, to be better with your davening. It's going to refresh yourself. So all of that becomes Avodas Hashem. And that is two ways to think about this, and two ways I want you to think about it. Number one is, it's always a good idea. It's always a critically good idea to take stock in how we are spending our hours. All too often, we just kind of go with the flow, take stock in how you are spending your hours. Because, again, I can tell you, and I hate to say it, and I hate to be grim, but it is a reality of the human condition that in Bigvuro 80 Shana, maybe it'll be 92 years, maybe it'll be 100 years, 120 years, but it's finite. And the mission is to maximize opportunities, to maximize achievements, to maximize everything that we want to be able to accomplish. And that is something that, again, this Gemara highlights, that there's so much time we spend in just like the regular mundane activities of life, which we also have the opportunity to endow with holiness, with Kedusha, and to go ahead and elevate. So that's point number one I wanted to share, and I think it's a very, very important point and something I want you to think about. Point number two I want to share is on Parshas Nazir. And Parshas Nazir, we read about the Nazir. I'm sorry, Parshas Naso, which is what you're reading in Chutz Laretz. Here in Eretz Yisrael, we're reading Baal Osa. And you read about the Nazir. And the Nazir is a very, very interesting personality. The Nazir takes upon himself the Neder of Nazirus, and now you have halachos that apply to a Nazir. He's not allowed to take haircuts. He's not allowed to be metamei lemeis. He's not allowed to drink wine. How long is Stam Nazirus? So the Gemara says Stam Nazirus is shloshim yom, is 30 days. And the Nazir is called Kadosh Yiyeh. As a result of taking Nazirus, he's called a Kadosh. And he's analogized both in the Gemara and Chazal to a Kohen Gadol, who also cannot be Metame Lames, who also doesn't drink wine when he's in the Beis HaMikdash and the like. So there are a lot of commonalities between the Nazir and Kohen Gadol. But I ask the question, Kadosh Yihyeh, he's holy, he's elevated, he's significant. 30 days, like what's the big deal? I'll be honest with you. I have gone 30 days without a haircut. I do it all the time. And as I see, some people on the screen also have done it as well. 30 days without a haircut, no big deal. 30 days without drinking wine, I happen to be a teetotaler. I also have gone often 30 days without drinking wine, perhaps a little grape juice for Kiddush, but not a big deal. And yes, I have gone in my life 30 days without going into a cemetery, without being Matame Lames. What exactly is the Kedusha and the elevated status of a Nazir? Why is he celebrated in the Chumash as a Kadosh? Why is he analogized to a Kohen Gadol? So perhaps the answer is, and a very fundamental answer, and something, again, I'd like you to take home and think about, is Chazal tell us that there is a very compelling juxtaposition in our parsha between the parsha of Nazirus and the parsha that immediately precedes Nazirus. Because the parsha that immediately precedes Nazirus is the parsha of Sota. And Chazal explained that why is there that smichos haparshios? Why is there that connection? Kol haroe Sota bikilkula. If anyone sees a Sota in her demise, in her denigrated state, yazir atzmo min hayayin. He should take on a Nazirus. And the Torah wants us to see this relationship between Sota and Nazir. What exactly is this relationship? What exactly is the message that the Torah wants us to see? So the Sota, what happened? What's her story? So Chazal tell us, she didn't start out as an evil person. Perhaps even her husband didn't treat her in the best way. Her husband didn't respect her, perhaps, in the best way. Perhaps she doesn't have the most loving relationship with her husband. And she goes to work, and there's a co-worker who gives her attention, perhaps a little bit of flirtation, a compliment here and there about how she looks, and it makes her feel good. It makes her feel positive about herself. Perhaps she's getting some kind of connection that she's not getting at home. And in the course of the way things happen, one thing leads to another, a friendship develops, a closer friendship develops, the husband gets wind of it, he is mekana her, he tells her, do not hang out with this guy, do not have yichud with this guy, do not talk to this guy, but he's showing her all this nice attention, she has yichud, and all of a sudden, she now has to drink from the Mayim Hamarim. And the Nazir sees this going on. And the Nazir, not yet a Nazir, but the person, the regular person, sees this. And Chazal say he has to understand that, you know what? That could be me. That could happen to me. I too could find myself in circumstances where, yeah, I'm having a yerida. I'm having a slip. I was not as strong as I would have liked to be. I wanted to accomplish more. I stopped accomplishing. I didn't accomplish as much. I start looking, my self-esteem starts dropping. I don't look at myself in the same exact way. And all of a sudden, I too can slide. And the Nazir, the person who sees this in the other person, understands that, you know what? This could just as well happen to me. This could happen to me. And the Nazir makes a statement. And the Nazir says and understands that things that happen around me, I have to learn lessons from them. I have to draw lessons. I have to take it in. I have to try and be inspired by things that happen, both good things and bad things. Sometimes I see a bad thing that's happening to this lady, and she brought it upon herself, her circumstance, whatever it is, that has to invoke in me a response. Messages are transmitted to me from around me, and it has to invoke upon me a response. And the godliness of the Nazir, the power of the Nazir, the greatness of the Nazir, is that he looks at this and says, I need to change. I need to be better. This causes him to look at his own, himself in the mirror, and says, you know what? I have to set gedarim. I have to watch what I'm doing. I have to try and be stronger and be better. And that makes the Nazir a very, very inspiring person, because things that happen around us, he's a thinker. He's someone who sees outside phenomena and he responds to them. They make an impression upon him. He stops. He contemplates and he acts. He didn't make a major step. 30 days. 30 days. But that 30 days causes him to be what I will call a spiritual activist. He is not satisfied with mediocrity. He is looking to grow. And when there are opportunities that present themselves, he goes ahead and seizes them. That's the spiritual activism. He doesn't have to be a Nazir. Nazir is 100% optional. You don't have to. But he chooses to. He opts in because he has religious ambitions. And that's the uniqueness and specialness of the Nazir. This week in the United States was a very, very tough week. Things happened in the United States. And there's stuff going on around us. There's stuff going on in the world the past 3-4 months. There's a lot going on that is unprecedented. Corona is an unprecedented thing in our lifetime. Anyone who's been alive has not seen anything like this before. What's going on in America the past week? You know, yeah, it happens. There have been riots, but it's something that's things are going on. Things are happening. I'm not here to make political statements. I'm not here to choose sides and editorialize in any sense. But I do think that when things are going on around us, it does require us to respond, not necessarily publicly. Not necessarily in a way that's bombastic, but like the Nazir. What am I supposed to take away? What lessons? What's significant to me? What can I draw from this? One of the things that's going on in the world in certain communities is a sense of anarchy. That people just, you know, doing anarchist, hefkeiros type of things. That's obviously a problem. That's a problem. That's not a response that's acceptable, and anarchy is never, ever healthy. On the other hand, we all understand that there are issues. There are societal issues. I want to share with you a beautiful story, and one of my favorite stories, actually. It's found in a book that is written by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. The book is a wonderful book. I highly recommend it. It's called To Heal a Fractured World, and in the beginning of chapter 4, Rabbi Sacks tells over the following story. It's a beautiful story. It's a story that happened in 1966 when an 11-year-old black boy moved with his parents and his family to a white neighborhood in Washington, D.C. And he's sitting, this black young man is sitting with his two brothers and two sisters on the front step of the house. And he waited to see how the people in the neighborhood would greet him. And they were not greeted. Passersby turned to look at them, but no one gave them a smile or even a glance of recognition. All the fearful stories he had heard about how whites treated blacks seemed to be coming true. Years later, writing about those first days in their new home, he says, "I knew we were not welcome here. I knew we would not be liked here. I knew we would have no friends. I knew we should not have moved here." And as he was thinking those thoughts, a white woman coming home from work passed by on the other side of the street. She turned to the children with a broad smile and said, "Welcome." Disappearing into the house, she emerged minutes later with a tray laden with drinks and cream cheese and jelly sandwiches, which she brought over to the children, making them feel at home. That moment, the young man later wrote, changed his life. It gave him a sense of belonging where there was none before. It made him realize at a time when race relations in the United States were still fraught, that a black family could feel at home in a white area, and that there could be relationships that were colorblind. Over the years, he learned to admire much about that woman across the street, but it was that first spontaneous act of greeting that became for him a definitive moment and a definitive memory. It broke down a wall of separation and turned strangers into friends. Who is this young man and what did he grow up to be? So this young man, his name is Stephen Carter, and he is a law professor at Yale University. And he eventually wrote a book that about what he learned on that day. And the name of the book is called Civility. And the name of the woman who did this act of kindness to him was a woman named Sarah Kestenbaum. She was a religious Jew. And in the Jewish tradition, Carter writes, civility is called chesed, the doing of acts of kindness, which in turn derive from the understanding that human beings are made in the image of God. Civility, he adds, itself may be seen as part of chesed. And then he writes, reflecting on the loss of civility in contemporary society, he comes to the conclusion, this is Carter now speaking, that it needs the encouragement of a religious tradition. And I just want to read one paragraph of what Carter writes. Nothing in contemporary secular conversation calls us to give up anything truly valuable for anybody else. Only religion offers a sacred language of sacrifice, selflessness, awe that enables believers to treat their fellow citizens as fellow passengers. But even if religion is the engine of civility, it has too few serious practitioners, which is why those who are truly moved by it to love their fellow human beings are so special. I learned that truth in 1966, and to this day, I can close my eyes and feel on my tongue the smooth, slick sweetness of the cream cheese and jelly sandwiches that I gobbled down on that summer afternoon, when I discovered how a single act of genuine and unassuming civility can change a life forever. So, if you're asking me, again, there's a lot going on out there, and I'm not suggesting that we're here to change the world, although we are here to change the world. But I am suggesting that the message that Rabbi Sacks is imparting, and the message of the idea of religion and the need for authentic religion to create a sense of morality, a sense of civility, a sense of chesed in the world, is something that is absolutely necessary, is the only thing that can redeem the world, is that sense of authentic religion. Another book I just want to share from is it has an opening that's very, very meaningful. It's written by Jordan Peterson. You've probably heard of Mr. Peterson. And the book is called 12 Rules for Life. And it's about rules. And the foreword of the book, and we're right after Kabbalah Satorah, the foreword of the book speaks about the roles of rules in our lives. Rules. And now when we have in certain communities a sense of anarchy, where there are no rules, people behaving without rules, for whatever reasons, but those things are not justified. Rules, we don't like rules. You know, when I put in 9-10 years ago, we added a curfew to the Mevaseret schedule, and everyone was upset. We announced it, we said it, there wasn't no surprise, but every Talmud was so upset. Rules. No one likes rules. Rules are confining. They're regimenting. They limit my freedoms. So he quotes, first page of the foreword. The Jewish people have been slaves to Paro for 400 years. And then in the desert for another 40 years. But as they're beginning that sojourn in the desert, they get to this mountain called Sinai. And they're given the Torah. And what happens to the Jews right after they got the Torah? Crazy. But they're free after 210 years of bondage by Paro. As Avodim, they're free. And they're going to get the Torah. But immediately after they get the Torah, they couldn't handle the freedom. Now free at last, they're unbridled and have lost all control as they dance wildly around an idol, a golden calf, displaying all manner of corporal corruption. And he tells a joke over here. I'll tell you, rules, we don't like a lot of rules. But the reality is that we need rules. And religion, the commandments, are not the 10 suggestions. The 613 mitzvos are not the 613 good ideas. They are mitzvos, they are tzivuyim. And tzivuyim are critically, critically important. We think, and it's a mistake, that rules limit us. And they limit our creativity and our positivity and our potential. And it's the exact opposite. I just want to tell you a word or two about one of the most creative people that ever lived. His name was Beethoven. Beethoven woke up every single day at the same time. He woke up every day at Alos HaShachar. He liked coffee, and he liked it in a very specific way. He used to count 60 kernels of coffee, no more, no less. He would work composing the music every day till 3 p.m. Then he would take a walk. He'd have his pencil with sheets. It helped his creativity. He had dinner. He drank a beer at dinner every night, smoked a pipe, and was in bed at 10 o'clock. Every day for decades, he had the exact same schedule. And he was one of the most creative geniuses that exists, that ever lived. Regimentation, rules, the opposite of anarchy, does not limit us. It actually expands us. We live in a Western culture that celebrates freedom. It celebrates autonomy. It celebrates no rules. And what happens, or what can happen, is there can be a sense of destabilization where things are no longer normal, no longer regular. And I'm not, you know, police have to do their jobs and not do in excess of their jobs. Racism has no place in society, and the Jewish world, unfortunately, has its racist elements. And that's certainly something that has to be eradicated. But at the same time, a sense of like anything goes and total hefker, no sense of structure, of rules, order, that's certainly not going to mess anywhere. What you see from, perhaps not a coincidence, the Sota, who starts to slip into a life of hefkerus, a life of lack of structure, a life of lack of rules. So the Nazir's response is, I need more structure. I need to stay away from wine. I need to stay away from tum. I need to create more structure, not less. And that's a very, very unique challenge, I think, that modern Western culture and Western society is really, really facing, is we celebrate freedoms. We celebrate everyone can do whatever they want. They can, in the sexual arena, we do whatever we want. We partner with whoever we want. We Tinder with whatever we want. We have our bucket list where we have to get this done by the end of my college. And by the end of this, I have to check all these things off. And it creates a life, a sense of hefkerus. And the Torah and Chag HaShavuos and Kabbalas HaTorah is there to give us the structure that we need to succeed, not the 10 suggestions, the 10 commandments. And there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about, but what I just want to close with and leave you with is, again, this is not an end of the year schmooze. This is just things that I've been thinking about as I am watching a sensationalist media that is also feeding the frenzy, watching, and again, watching a president who is also just not disciplined in his own, again, he's a conservative and he's a law and order president, supposedly. But the lack of self-discipline in speech, in dignity, is all just a total debasing. It's all a reflection of a greater and greater hefkerus. And there needs to be a sense, I think what Rabbi Sacks says and what Stephen Carter says, I think is very, very profound and is very, very meaningful. And is to have a sense of, religion, authentic religion tells us what civility is all about, tells us what morality is all about, tells us what chesed is all about, tells us how to treat another human being, how to smile to another human being, how to contribute, make another human being feel good. I'll just share with you just a story about a friend of mine who I find a very inspiring person. Anyone who meets him, you walk away feeling good about yourself. He's a 50-year-old man who might be talking to a 6-year-old child, and the 6-year-old feels like $1 million, and a 20-year-old feels like $1 million, and a colleague his age feels like $1 million, and someone his father's age feels like $1 million. You walk away from this relation with this person, and you walk away feeling good about yourself. You walk away pumped up, feeling like he pumps you up. And these are midos of treating people properly that are inculcated from a hashkafa that's a Torah Hashem hashkafa. So, in summary, I rambled a bit tonight, but I rambled about things that I feel are important, and we made a few points that I just want to quickly summarize. Point number one is the lessons of Yitzchak Avinu, is the lessons of stack your day and see how much of our day we spend doing things that are very, very mundane that perhaps we think we're not getting credit for, and the truth is we won't get credit for them unless we do them with a proper kavana. And then they all can be converted into mitzvos if we do it with the right kavanah. Number two is the nazir and the sota and their relationship. And to be able to see things around us and respond to phenomena. Do not just take it lightly. To go ahead and see things that are happening and say, you know what? There's what for me to learn from. Do not be complacent. Be spiritually ambitious and activist. Like the Nazir is, that's his Kedusha, that's the Kodesh, Kadoshi Hiye. And the sense of civility, the sense of the need for rules, the need for religion, and the need to see everyone as a Tzelem Elokim, and also realize that when people are behaving wrongly and badly, that also is something that we should, be moche, rebuke, at least rebuke internally, say this is off, this is not okay, but at the same time, again, there's a lot of not okay across the ledger. There's a lot of not okay. And identify the not okay. And then in your little Dalet Amos, because that's where it starts, from our little Dalet Amos, whether it's a neighbor across the street, of giving them a Shalom Aleichem, a smile, a friendliness, an appreciation, a dialogue, something you're in, you might be going to college in the summer, some kind of, you're engaging people as a Tzelem Elokim, in a positive way. Again, the lesson of Miss Kestenbaum, who literally it sounds like changed Stephen Carter's life from an 11-year-old boy as now a Yale law professor, and how he was changed by her and remembered her. She died very young, but wrote chapters in his book about her and her impact on him as an 11-year-old boy from a cream cheese and jelly sandwich. To me, that is something very fundamental. That's all part of what Torah is all about. Something we have to absorb and inculcate. And Be'ezus Hashem, we do. And we should all have a wonderful Shabbos Kodesh, an uplifting Shabbos Kodesh. And I look forward to seeing you all next week, learning with you all next week. And we should all continue growing with each other together, being role models for all the people that we touch, and continuing to steig away. Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos Kodesh.